Hi, this is M. Allen Cunningham. I'm an author, publisher, and teacher in Portland, Oregon, and you're in the Atelier. In the Atelier is a place for occasional thoughts on literature, writing, the life of the imagination. Come on in. I'm glad you're here. Today's installment, an Atelier talk. When I was in my late 30s, I was in a place where I had worked seriously and steadily as a writer for nearly 20 years. I had published 5 books and numerous shorter works, and I had the strange experience at that point of returning to an academic setting as a student of creative writing. I'd actually been teaching in various capacities for more than a decade, but I wanted to find more stable teaching employment with a better paying institution, and it had become clear that such institutions were only open to those who could produce the sheepskin of an official degree. In my case, I had left college in my early 20s and gone to work on my writing, and this had worked out for me. I had found an agent and published my first novel at 26, The Green Age of Asher Witherow. When that book met with some success, I left the college pursuit behind entirely in order to keep writing and publishing. And that's what I did, writing 2 more novels, a short story collection, and a few nonfiction books. But here I was, years beyond age 26, years beyond that first book, and now I had decided to close my eyes, hold my nose, and swallow the nauseating price tag attached to a graduate degree in writing. The much maligned, much misunderstood, inflationary, but not worthless, MFA. I couldn't be sure what the people in this MFA program were going to make of me, given my weird background. So I went into the experience a bit guarded in some ways a bit wary. But what my years of writing had taught me was that there's no finish line in this artistic discipline. There's no quote-unquote expertise. There's no arrival. Creative writing isn't something one ever pins down. It's a shape-shifting thing. You know, the so-called rules are always changing, and you're at the whims of the muse of any given project you undertake. I knew that much. I knew there's always more to learn. As it happened, I wasn't the only latecomer in that MFA program. I wasn't the only one unsure about what the people in this MFA program would make of me. In my cohort was another writer named Dave Roth. Dave had come to the study of creative writing after many years of secure employment as a writer for hire, and in his retirement he'd resolved to commit himself to a more personal, more serious pursuit of writing, and it was a pursuit he felt he'd put off for too long. Dave and I were different ages, we were from different coasts of the U.S., and with different personal backgrounds. But what's for sure is that Dave and I became one another's readers and started a conversation. Creative, literary, dialectical, a conversation that still now, 7 years later, is ongoing. So today's installment of In the Atelier branches into something new, something that just might become a semi-regular feature on this podcast, a feature I'm calling Atelier Talks. The idea here is to capture some portions of that long, evolving conversation that Dave and I have had going for the past several years. Since our completion of the MFA, Dave has published his first novel, The Femme Fatale Hypothesis, with Regal House Publishing. It's an exquisite book, complete with deeply dimensional characters and a mindful and meaningful plot, and you should read it. Dave lives way across the continent in Pennsylvania, but that doesn't interfere too much with our regular discussions about our reading and writing, about literary appreciation, about creativity and craft. Today, we tackle the question of seriousness in writing. Our springboard for this discussion was a recent interview with novelist and 2022 Pulitzer Prize winner Joshua Cohen from the New York Review of Books, and I should provide a bit from that interview for context. The interviewer begins by asking Cohen, "When did you start to take writing seriously, either as a vocation or as a creative outlet?" And Cohen responds like this, quote, "Oh, I still don't know how seriously I take it. It's more like I try not to take it very seriously," unquote. Cohen then goes on to say, quote, "Journalism satisfied that need I had to communicate, that need I had to be read, whereas I never had those desires for my fiction. For me, fiction has always been a way to clarify and order my feelings and thoughts. There's something about the public nature or immediacy of nonfiction that allowed me to preserve the sanctity of my fiction, which I know sounds a little pious, but there it is. Journalism and criticism and essays and the like were, and to a degree still are, my way of making certain concessions to social and market expectations, permitting me to assert the personal, the private inviolability of the fiction I'm trying to write, unquote. That's where this Atelier talk with Dave Roth begins. You emailed me this interview with Joshua Cohen, the contemporary novelist, and he makes some interesting comments in the very first response to the first question in that interview.
Exactly. I mean, I think I just wanted to get this sense from you of what your thoughts were on this idea of what does it mean to take writing seriously or to be a serious writer. And the reason I asked that, the reason it came to my mind to have this conversation with you is I've always felt that you take writing very seriously. That the work that you do, the work of yours that I've read seems the task of writing it, as I think about it, as I read the words and I read the story unfolds and the depth of the story, the historical context, the characters themselves, the complexity of the characters, it strikes me as very hard. think of gymnastics or diving, right? Where each dive or each vault comes with a level of difficulty. And you can ace a less difficult vault. You can ace that and get a certain point total and then multiply that by the level of difficulty, and that's your score. Or you can try something much harder with greater risk of failure. And I kind of feel that when I read a lot of books by quote-unquote serious writers, sometimes I feel like they've just taken on so much for themselves and they've just made the process so hard, you know? So I just wanted to break that down a little and see how you think about it. Do you think about it as like the seriousness for you also involves sort of the difficulty of the actual, you know, proposed story that you're looking to tell? Does that factor into your thinking about what a serious writer does at all? I guess maybe that's a first question.
No, that's a fantastic question. And as I'm listening to you describe your initial ideas about what might constitute seriousness, I'm immediately thinking about all the different strands that kind of feed out from this word seriousness, all the different ways we might interpret it in the cultural conversation.
And
one thing that comes to mind is, so you're talking about it in terms of a practitioner sense, like the task that the writer sets for themselves is one way of thinking about literary seriousness. I think in the cultural conversation, when we hear it talked about, it often dovetails with ideas about I think the question of the market comes into it, right? To some extent, is a writer setting out to create a book that will reach the most possible readers, or is the writer doing something that's just much more of a personal kind of reckoning with their own daemon or whatever, their own inspirational goad, whatever form that takes? So is the market foremost in mind, or is the aesthetic foremost in mind? And how does that come into like the definition of what constitutes seriousness? So those are two ways of thinking about it, maybe.
Exactly. And I think that does come into it. But I think what I'm thinking about, when I think about seriousness, I think about a couple of things. I think about things like, what is it you want to write about? Mm-hmm. And, you know, to be a serious writer, do you have to like embrace big ideas? Does that have to be the case? Or the other aspect of it is the attention you pay to the language and the craft at all levels. You know, so let me just throw out a couple ideas in those two realms. I think that sometimes people get so caught up in high concept. For example, in order to talk about some man's irrational obsession, passion, you know, vengeance or whatever it is, that it has to be something like, you know, Moby Dick. He has to be searching for the white whale. And then I read an author like Kent Harif, and I read Our Souls at Night. book like that. And I think that book is dealing with huge ideas, right? Mm-hmm. Of just like huge ideas about being human, what it is to be human. And of course, he's dealing with it at, you know, some people who are aging and their lives are very quiet. There's nothing big. There's nothing politically charged about it. It's a very deeply personal, small world kind of story. Mm-hmm. And his whole Plain Song trilogy, you know, everything he wrote, the whole entire Plain Song trilogy, very local, very personal, deeply, deeply personal relationships. Not a lot that you can actually read as some sort of commentary on society in general. It's just about stories about being human, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
My personal opinion, I don't think seriousness necessarily means that you know, pick huge, big ideas, is there God, or anything like that. But what I think does distinguish serious writing from writing that is less serious is the attention to the language at every level, not just the, you know, writing a good story, but writing a good chapter, writing a good paragraph, writing a good sentence, picking the right word.
So it's not subject or theme, it's treatment.
Yeah, I think more so. You know, it's kind of coming down for me to the seriousness with which you approach your topic and the language you use to express those thoughts, those ideas. I think that, to me, is a greater measure of seriousness as a writer than whether or not you picked a huge, you know, great American novel sort of topic. This started off, this answer that I was quoting from started off with this question of, that was, when did you start to take your writing seriously?
Yeah, either as a vocation or as a creative outlet.
Exactly. And so that concept of serious, that's where the seriously concept comes from, as a starting point for this conversation. Mm-hmm. And that's what got me wondering, well, what the hell does seriously mean? Sure, why Cohen has this attitude towards, you know, not feeling that he needs his fiction to be read. He says journalism satisfied that need I had to communicate, and then that need I had to be read, whereas I never had those desires for my fiction. I mean, it just struck me as so strange that
you wouldn't want your fiction to be read, right?
Exactly. I don't care if my fiction gets read. Well, for me, I can't tell you how rewarding it is to run into somebody who has read my book and says, you know, I really enjoyed it. I thought that was, and I've actually had people go be very effusive about how it affected them and how that, you know, they could relate to it in certain ways. And when you get that feedback from somebody who's read it, there is an immediate feeling of it was all worthwhile.
Oh yeah, you know, that's all it's about. Yeah, exactly.
Right. And to be able to get that in your lifetime, you know, I mean, even though you're not making a living at it, even if it's not selling enough to actually, you know, improve your savings account at all.
Yeah, which is, yeah, that's usually the case that it's not.
Yeah. Still, the emotional currency that is received from that kind of feedback is not to be diminished. And also he goes on to talk about, he uses this phrase he calls the, you know, allowed me to preserve the sanctity of my fiction. I just thought that there was something silly about that, you know?
It's especially if you tie it to that idea of only when fiction is unread is it sanctified.
Yeah, exactly. Only, and then he goes and wins what? The Pulitzer Prize, the National Book Award, or whatever. You know, the book is getting him quite a bit of attention because now it's a big award winner and everything.
So, and he's being read, so he's at liberty to say this, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, there's something disingenuous about it. Let me put it that way.
Well, and I'm sure it's also that he's probably speaking off the cuff, and he might be, once transposed into a written interview, this might seem to. Certain ideas might be conflated that he didn't mean to conflate, you know.
When you think about what seriously, when people talk about a serious writer, they're usually talking about someone where they think that the work that they've created has some import. it's supposed to last, right? That has some significance. It's mm-hmm. it's of consequence. You know, there's some importance to it or something like that. You know, I mean, does that ring true for you too? That sort of importance, consequential kind of thing?
Well, absolutely. And ultimately, that's impossible without the reader.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
It has to be read to have any import or consequence. Otherwise, the communication has not occurred that allows for that consequence.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. Having some readership, paltry as it might be, that's the consequence of the writing. You know, it's not even the fact that you got somebody's attention and got it published. That's not the consequential thing. That's not the important thing. The important thing is that it was read, that it reached another person, and another person said, I can relate. That resonates for me.
Yeah, something has to complete the circuit, right?
The circuit
of creativity, the flow of thought, the flow of expression. That circuit can only be complete once the reader comes to the book. That you mentioned the paltry number of readers, though, and I just wanted to, I think we should be clear that that is often the case for most writers. It's a paltry number of readers, but that does not diminish the importance or consequence. I've had to learn, you know, over time to continue to focus on those one-to-one writer to reader connections, like in everything mm-hmm. I've written, mm-hmm. any books I've published, it's always all about one person
right.
that has read the one book, you know. It's not about mm-hmm. the book reaching 1,000 people, although
right.
I'm sure that has its benefits. But in terms of just how the work, if we're talking particularly about fiction mm-hmm. or creative writing in general, how the work needs to function in the world, it can only function in the world on that one-to-one basis of connection. So even if the book does reach 1,000 people or 1,000,000 people, it's only happening to one person at a time.
Yeah.
And the connection and the impact is always singular, right?
Yeah.
And so ultimately it doesn't matter if it's 1,000 people or 1,000,000 people. If there's one person,
right.
that's all that really matters.
And I think, and we're speaking obviously from the standpoint of the writer, not from the standpoint of the marketplace.
That's the other thing, yeah. This conversation can be had from all angles, right?
It
can be had from the perspective of the writer, the practitioner of creative writing. It can be had from the perspective of the marketplace and what the marketplace expects or demands or compels the writer to do. And then it can be had from the perspective of the reader.
Yeah.
And I think that third perspective is really important. What does it mean to a reader for writing to be serious?
Well, you know, I think that's, and I think that the fact that we're having this conversation, a couple of writers, I just think it's interesting to note that a lot of readers do not read the way that writers read. So I've done a couple of things. I've discussed books with my wife, who's a much more casual reader than I am, who criticizes me for the way that I read. You know, it's like, you know,
for your obsessiveness as a reader.
Yeah, well, it's one of these things where she wants me to meet the writer where they are. You know, don't bring my standards of what I consider to be, you know, good writing or great literature or whatever to a book that doesn't aspire to be that. You know, and my feeling is that every book should aspire to be as good as it can be within the context of what it is it's trying to be, right? Mm-hmm. So just because you are a, you know, a genre writer of some kind doesn't mean that you can write crap, you know?
This goes back to, there's a really wonderful book by C.S. Lewis, actually, about criticism. You know, he was a scholar and a critic in addition to being a writer himself, a creative
mm-hmm.
writer. And this book came out in 1961. It's called An Experiment in Criticism, which sounds super boring, but it's actually a really wonderful book. It's like very lively and sort of colloquial in its style. And it's this thin little pamphlet, but he has so many great ideas in there. And the gist of his approach to criticism is he says essentially, let's not judge people by the kinds of books they read. So he's talking there about genre and genre readers, right? This sort of snobbery. Let's judge books by the kind of reading they encourage.
Right. Yeah. No. Absolutely.
This, don't bring some standards that don't apply.
Yeah. No. Because I can come to any genre, and I defy anyone to read Georges Simenon's the Stain on the Snow and tell me that that's not literature.
Yeah.
I mean that, you know, and it's true of any. You know, I think Dashiell Hammett is in the same category. I think when you take something like Louise Erdős's Justice Trilogy, and you read those books, you realize that there's a crime at the heart of every one of those books. It's not a whodunit, and it's not a crime novel in the sense of there's going to be that there's this one main character who's trying to solve the crime, but they are crime novels. They're novels about crimes against humanity, terrible things that have happened to people, and there has to be some sort of resolution. And that now becomes a quote-unquote crime novel that is a literary experience.
Okay, I have a way to propose about thinking about this in terms of genre. If we use crime novels as an example,
okay,
or mystery novels, they come with a certain set of rules, you know, expectations that the reader will bring to the genre, maybe.
Right.
So part of the pleasure is that the genre writer satisfies the reader's expectations by providing some pleasures that come, expected pleasures that come through the form, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That kind of blurs into formula rather than form in some cases. And I think that's when we talk about like lesser genre books in a literary sense.
I agree.
So form and also versus formula is one way of thinking about it, right?
And I say, I would suggest that they are less serious books. I don't think the writer expects somebody to do a serious exegesis of, you know, of their novel.
Right.
You know,
that's not the kind of reading it encourages, right?
You're not going to do an annotation like they do of Finnegan's Wake.
Yeah.
You know, of any of these crime novels that these people are creating, you know, and so what my wife is essentially telling me is, why are you picking this novel apart on this level of wanting to see a certain level of consistency or this, that, and the other that you would expect of a more serious book? And my main problem with that is, well, there are two main problems with that. One is it's not an enjoyable reading experience when the only way that an author can think of to describe somebody's lips is being sort of blood red. I mean, how many times do you have to read that in the course of the story before you wonder, does this person even have an editor to say, look, you know, there's only so many times this person can do a slashing blood red lipstick on their mouth. Or, you know, there's only so many times you can pull that off.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes like a tick, right?
So you want
to know the writer was paying attention when they were laying the words down on the page, and that they read and reread their work and they tried to get it right. So I'm going to spend the time reading it. So I want to know they paid attention when they put the time in.
That's a great way of thinking about it. Their attention, the attention you're bringing to the book should be rewarded by the sense of attention that they brought to the writing, right?
If you're paying attention and you are being careful in your craft, I will bring to it an equal level of attention as I'm reading the book. And if I sense that you weren't paying very close attention, well, I'm not going to either.
Right. You want form, not formula.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned, I think it was the Erdős book you mentioned, right?
The trilogy. Yeah. All three of them. Yeah.
Yeah. As those are observing a form of the genre without straying into formulaic.
Absolutely.
Structures
absolutely.
And stuff.
And, I don't even and think
formulaic
she would
sentence level descriptions, right? But I think of this as analogous to the satisfactions that come of like a poem, like a great sonnet or a great Sestina. There's a form that you expect as a reader.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a huge satisfaction when you find that form executed brilliantly. And there can be a lot of qualitatively serious stuff that we've been talking about, there too. I think also what we're talking about with the seriousness is a more lasting reading experience, right? So when you're thinking in terms of form versus formula, the form side is going to be a more lasting reading experience. The formula side is going to be more the beach read. You enjoy it while it's happening and then maybe don't ever think about it again. I don't know. I just wanted to throw that in there as a way of thinking about it. Form versus formula, because there is satisfaction to be had and there is seriousness to be explored in forms, even if those forms come with certain expectations, as long as it doesn't stray off into the formulae.
I think that's a great point, but it's really one of those things where you know, I think most writers, and maybe let me run this one by you and see what you think. Most writers would like to have readers who pay attention, who are actually paying attention to their work.
Yeah, regardless of what kind of writer or what genre exactly they're aspiring to. Yeah.
So you don't want somebody who's just turning pages. Like, for example, I think that Elmore Leonard has this one tip that says, cut out all the stuff that nobody reads anyway. Mm-hmm. So I don't believe in that. I believe in trying to write that paragraph that doesn't necessarily move the plot dramatically forward, trying to write that dialogue that does more than one thing. As Francine Prose writes in her book, How to Read Like a Writer, any dialogue that's not doing at least two things is not working.
I have the same idea here in my notes. I was going to mention the importance of achieving more than one thing in any element of the writing. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. I mean, I think all writers should have a certain standard that they're trying to live up to. I mean, does that make sense to you at all?
Absolutely. And you used a keyword just a few minutes ago. You talked about, does the writer express the form in a successful way? And I think expression is the keyword here. Is the writing expressing in a resonant way? Is the work, the novel, short story, novella, is it a human expression? That's often a concern that's larger than matters of page turning plot. I have three things written down as sort of criteria that I came up with as a way of thinking about this question of seriousness.
Interesting.
These are just the things that occurred to me, and I've mentioned one of them already, which is the C.S. Lewis idea. Mm-hmm. So as I'm thinking about, like, what constitutes serious writing, I'm thinking about the reading experience primarily. I'm thinking of it more from the reading perspective than the writer perspective.
Okay.
So the first thing I came up with is this C.S. Lewis idea. If we're trying to figure out what constitutes seriousness in a work, the first question is, what type of reading is the work encouraging? What type of reading is the work inviting me as the reader to be involved in? And then secondly, it's the thing you just mentioned. Is the writing achieving more than one thing, like in any given moment? So in aspects of character, are the characterizations achieving more than one thing? Is the plot, or the convolutions of the plot, is that achieving more than one thing? Is the theme being laid out in a way that achieves more than one thing? Is the voice achieving more than one thing? And all these things, interpenetrate, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, how are the characters advancing the plot? How is the plot reflecting on and deepening our understanding of the characters and so on? So that's the second thing. So is the writing doing more than one thing? And then the third thing, I thought about James Baldwin, and he has this amazing essay. Well, he has a lot of amazing essays. I love him foremost as an essay writer, and he has an essay called The Discovery of What It Means to Be an American.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's in his book, Nobody Knows My Name.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But he has a quote in there that I actually share with my students quite a bit, and it's just, this is how he ends the essay. He says, "The interior life is a real life, and the intangible dreams of people have a tangible effect on the world." And that gets me thinking about interiority, you know, honoring the interior life, or another way of thinking about it is like inwardness, like human inwardness, because we all live so much of our lives in an inward realm.
Mm-hmm.
Our interior lives are real and they do have an effect in the world. So is the writing somehow reflecting or honoring or affirming the validity of the inward life? So what kind of reading is the writing encouraging? How is the writing achieving more than one thing in every instance? And then is it somehow reflecting and affirming human inwardness, which is ultimately, like, that's our humanity. That's what makes us human, our inwardness, right? Our imaginations, our inner life, our consciousness.
It's interesting because it's one of the things that gets the most lost when you start getting into plot-driven fiction. People get impatient with those interior moments. These three criteria that you've laid out here in the form of questions seem like if you're asking these questions as you're writing, then you're paying attention to what you're doing.
Yeah, you know, I think the attention note is brilliant and important. I'm so glad you bring that in. There's a really wonderful quote from a contemporary writer, Teju Cole. It was an interview I heard with him. He said one of his main questions constantly as a writer is, how am I helping the reader pay more attention in this moment?
Oh, that's interesting.
That's a really good guiding light to go by as a writer, I think. Because it can pertain to the more mechanical aspects of what you're writing, but also it definitely pertains to that question of, are you taking seriously your task as a writer, and are you showing respect for your reader in doing that, in trusting that they will bring a seriousness to the reading experience too?
Yeah.
You know, how am I helping the reader pay more attention in this moment? There's another question that you sent along that I think is a great one that flows from this, which is, can one take one's writing seriously without having a daily discipline?
Yeah. What do you think? Why did you consider that an intriguing question?
Well, it just flows from the ideas about attention and care that you were just mentioning, the importance of the writer demonstrating those things. And one's discipline is an aspect of, or the foundation from which that care and attention comes, right? So, but I don't know, in terms of the question, can one take one's writing seriously without having a daily discipline? I think the answer is just yes.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping that.
Yeah.
Because that's one thing I feel that I'm most self-critical about is I'm sort of the Toni Morrison school of writing, but without anywhere near her level of productivity. So, Toni Morrison is one of those writers, and people ask her about, what is your discipline? You know, when do you write? You know, that sort of thing. Her answer to when do I write is, I write when I feel like it.
Right. Yeah. A lot of writers say that. A lot of great writers.
Yeah. And I just find that it happens any time of day. It can be, some days it doesn't happen at all. I try every day to at least read something that is either informing my writing or informing writing in general, but it may never lead to a sentence. And then there's times when I have to get up at 11 o'clock at night, I have to call the document up on my computer screen, and I have to change that sentence that haunts me and won't let me sleep.
Yeah. I think, I don't know, my feeling is that the seriousness is foremost, and so it precedes questions of regimen.
Yeah, yeah.
If you are seriously deported or seriously comport yourself toward your work, taking your work seriously on every level, the writing is going to be happening all the time, whether you're actually putting words to paper or words to screen or not. It's happening on some level. And a major part of that is in your reading too. And so I would say it's almost more important to be constantly reading seriously while taking oneself seriously as a writer. And even in your reading, you're growing as a writer. You're constantly acquiring new understanding and nuance and appreciation that you can apply, you know?
Yeah, and also, becoming more and more judgmental.
That's...
And more and more unforgiving.
Yeah,
and more
that's
and
the
more,
side effect, maybe.
More and more incorrigible to other people.
A worse and worse book group member, right?
Yeah, a worse and worse book club member, absolutely.
No, but so I believe strongly in the idea that once you're engaged in a project and you're taking it seriously, you've gotten it off the ground, whether it's with a paragraph or a page, and it's sticking with you to the point where you're thinking about it constantly. That's the writing. That's half the work. You're doing it already. And that ultimately the actual words will start to flow when it's time. But whether you're consciously thinking about it, ruminating, making notes, or just letting your unconscious continue the work on the piece of writing, it's going to be happening as long as there's that foundation of serious commitment, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it is important too, though, that after a certain point, if you find you haven't written anything for a long time, you might have to face facts and just chain yourself to the desk and see what happens. Because a lot of the time, showing up, just sitting at the desk and waiting is an important thing too. Being in a physical spot where the writing can actually be committed to the page or to the screen, putting yourself in that physical place is really important. The externalizing of something out of the brain through the arm and onto the page, like that process is key in terms of actually getting clear on what it is that you're making.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I agree. I mean, at some point, if you're a writer, at some point you have to write.
In the Atelier is produced by Atelier 26 Books. For more information, visit atelier26books.com. I'm M. Alan Cunningham. Thanks for listening. So long for now.